from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. It's been more than a week since Congress finished up work on a massive foreign aid package that includes assistance to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. While there's been a lot of attention on opposition to provide military aid to Ukraine and Israel, the Taiwanese package arguably flew under the radar, even though backers of the idea say it could be vital to blunting any potential Chinese invasion of the island. Missouri Congressman Mark Alford just recently returned from a trip to Taiwan. The Republican represents the state's 4th congressional district, which takes in a swath of central and western Missouri and includes Fort Leonard Wood in Pulaski County. Alford joins us now from Washington, D.C. Congressman, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Jason, thank you for having me.
What was your biggest takeaway from your trip to Taiwan last week?
Wow, what a beautiful country Taiwan is. I know we don't officially recognize them as a nation, but they are very independent-minded people, a beautiful island that needs our help. They need our help in deterring the communist Chinese from further aggression. Xi Jinping is determined to take over Taiwan. And if you look at the timeline that he's been operating on, he's pretty much compressed what he wanted to do maybe by 2035 in taking Taiwan. And some of our generals are saying that the timeline now could be moved up to 2027. That's only 3 years away. And Taiwan desperately needs, under the Taiwan Relations Act that now is 45 years old with the United States, this agreement that sets up that we will help them in their capacity for self-defense. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we will go over and defend them, but we are helping them, supplying them with the armaments they need, and that's what this package was, $8.1 billion to help them. The problem is, Jason, is that they have already bought a lot of armaments that we have not been able to get to them in time. They are due 64 F-16 jets by 2026. Those are not there. 400 Harpoon missiles built there in the St. Louis area, the Harpoon missile is, and those have not gotten to the people there. The greatest deterrent against communist China and Xi Jinping and his continued aggression is going to be able to have the armaments in place to be a deterrent, and that needs to happen as soon as possible.
You mentioned this, but I think one of the confounding things about the U.S.-Taiwanese relationship is they're in this limbo area where they pretty much act as an independent country, but America does not consider themselves a country. And I've done some research on this. There's some real disagreement within Taiwan about declaring independence or remaining in this limbo status quo. Do you think that the infusion of aid provides the connotation to China that we see Taiwan as an independent country, and that could exacerbate tensions?
Well, I think that's always a possibility, but I am tired of the way that this administration and this president, his appeasement to communist China at the same time that we were over meeting with President Tsai and Vice President Lai, who's going to be the next president on May 19th, Antony Blinken was over meeting with Xi Jinping, cozying up to him. And I am determined that we show strength with Taiwan in helping them elevate their position on the world stage to fight against the coercion, economic and social coercion by Xi Jinping. He is trying to isolate them. Now, I realize that we are living under the One China policy. In 1979, our government policy has been to follow what we refer to as the One China policy. But we do have key provisions of the Taiwan Relations Act, which include making available to Taiwan the defense articles and services that they need to maintain a sufficient self-defense capability. That's what we've agreed to, and we need to live up to that capability no matter what lies down the road. It's the same as President Reagan said, peace through strength.
One of the arguments you've heard from people who oppose Ukraine funding, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a few minutes, is that there's no amount of money that could be spent to help Ukraine push Russia out of its borders. So couldn't you make the same argument that there's really no amount of money that we could provide Taiwan that would prevent a country that is literally 60 times larger than them in population from overtaking their territory?
Well, yes, if you look at it from just the standpoint of supplying Taiwan with the armaments and the money that they need to deter China, but they are not in this alone. Australia is on our team. We are on the side of the Taiwanese. Part of the provisions under the TRA is that we have to as well maintain our capacity to resist any resort to force or other forms of coercion that the communist Chinese would put up. And so we have a responsibility as well. That's why we have the B-2 stealth bomber. That's why we're building the B-21 stealth bomber, the Raider. And that's going to be a wonderful deterrent. That's why there are other platforms that are being built right now in the defense industry space that are going to help in our deterrence of communist China. Communist China has its tentacles in everything we do in the United States, and they're not going to stop at Taiwan. They're building investments through the Belt and Road Initiative in our hemisphere. They're intent on having an influence there, building ports, airports, seaports, roadways, bridges, to where they can exert pressure on these nations and supplant us as a leading economic and world power.
One of the things you've heard, including from people like former President Trump, is that any aid to Ukraine should be a loan. But we haven't heard similar types of arguments when we're talking about aid to Israel or Taiwan. And Taiwan is like a top 20 economy in the country. They clearly could afford the $8 billion worth of military aid that we're giving them. Why should it be like a grant, essentially, and not a loan?
Well, for the simple reason, one of the reasons is, I believe, is that 65% of the world's goods are transported through the Straits of Taiwan and the South China Sea. If and when we do have a conflict with China, or China decides to set up a blockade around Taiwan, which is a very real possibility, even right now, every day, the communist Chinese are crossing the median line in the Taiwan Strait, trying to provoke the Taiwanese. If it does come to a war, a conflict, it is going to be a sea battle. It will shut down the traffic in the Straits of Taiwan, and it will lead to a greater depression than we saw in the 1920s and 30s. It will make COVID look like a cakewalk. 5% of the goods that you now see on the store shelves are going to be there. We don't need it to happen. We need to protect Taiwan, but we also need to protect our economic interests. Israel is a different story. They are a leader, a beacon of hope and freedom and democracy in the Mideast. I believe that they are God's chosen people, that this is their land. They are willing to live in harmony if those other people who are in that land are willing to live alongside them as well. But that has been the issue. They do not want Israel to be there. They do not want the state of Israel to exist. Their Iron Dome is becoming depleted, and David Sling and the Arrow Project, which is in a higher altitude, that are defending Israel, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and that's why it's important that we resupply them. Ukraine is a totally different story, and I just questioned the Secretary of Defense not more than an hour ago about this very issue. He was testifying before our Armed Services Committee. I asked him, Mr. Secretary, what does victory look like in Ukraine? The previous Congress has appropriated and authorized $113 billion, $67 billion of that for direct military assistance. This president slow rolled out the aids, the F-16s, the attack of missiles, the Abrams tanks. This war could have been over a long time ago had President Biden not dragged his heels.
Well, let's get to...
get a clear definition of what victory looks like, and that is the problem. Taxpayers should not be continuing to fund this mission until we know what victory is defined as.
So let's go to Israel and Ukraine. I'll start with Israel. So you voted for an aid package to help Israel in its war in Gaza. But there was one person from the Missouri delegation, Congresswoman Cori Bush, who voted against that measure. Here's what she had to say last week to reporters in St. Louis.
I voted no on the Israeli military funding because we don't want our tax dollars going to anywhere that's going to bomb children and to bomb, you know, innocent people. The Gaza has been just devastated, absolutely devastated. The people are, and it's a famine happening right now, and this is at the hands of the United States government. And so I voted against that because absolutely in no way we could be 34,000 more Palestinians alive right now instead of 34,000 dead with many under rubble.
That is Congresswoman Cori Bush. She represents Missouri's 1st Congressional District. In addition to responding to the Congresswoman, why should America continue to fund Israel's military invasion of Gaza if they can't guarantee the safety of civilians there?
Hamas and the Islamic terrorists, the jihadists around the world, look at Israel as the little Satan and the United States of America as the great Satan. This is not going to stop with Israel. We were over there 4 weeks ago, and we met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and he told me, if you do not prepare to fight for civilization, you will go under. You will be overcome. That is what they are facing right now. Imagine, Jason, that you are living in a house there in St. Louis, and the person across the street, the person to the right, the house to the left, and the house behind you, everyone not just doesn't want you in their neighborhood, they want you dead. That is what Israel is looking like. When it comes to Gaza and the way that the IDF has prosecuted this war, keep in mind of the thousands of people, almost 2,000, who were murdered, who were butchered. We went to these kibbutzes, mothers, raped. We were in these kibbutzes. There are 133 innocent hostages now being held in Gaza. I believe 8 of those are U.S. citizens, including Hirsch Goldberg. We met with their families. In war, innocent people do die. I believe that the IDF has taken every step possible to try to minimize that. But now they're left with the option of going in and finishing off Hamas. They've killed or captured, I believe, 18 of the 24 remaining battalions there, and they have to finish the job. They have to annihilate Hamas and free the hostages.
How do you do that without creating another Hamas? We kind of have seen like efforts to try and, quote, eradicate terrorism when America's doing that. And it's sort of like whack-a-mole almost. Is this idea that the IDF can totally dismantle and eradicate this antagonism among Palestinians really a realistic goal if many Palestinians see Israelis as occupiers and invaders?
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? You know, a lot of talk is about having a two-state solution. You know, Israel early on was for a two-state solution, but the PLO did not agree to it. They could not get the consensus among the Islamic community surrounding Israel, and so they don't have a two-state solution. I think, and I heard this from President Herzog, they would love to live in peace and harmony with the rest of the people there in the Mideast. That's not happening. Saudi Arabia was about to sign on to this agreement, and that is one of the reasons that Hamas on October 7th did what they did to invade Israel, to kill its citizens and capture citizens and hold them hostage. And so, you know, I don't think you're ever going to completely eliminate Islamic terrorism and that corrupted ideology. But a good start is to eliminate those fighters and those terrorists who are carrying out the mission of that.
Do you believe a two-state solution is possible?
Well, you can't have a two-state solution with terrorists involved, and that's been the problem. You know, Israel, they had a ceasefire until October 7th. And so, no, you're not going to be able to have a two-state solution when one of those states is a terrorist state.
Moving on to Ukraine, you said that you want to see what victory looks like in Ukraine before authorizing any more money for that country. But we saw after the United States froze aid because of the impasse in Congress that they were losing ground pretty quickly. So doesn't that show that, like, giving them nothing will ultimately result in them losing the war to Russia? In other words, is doing nothing a guarantee that you won't know what victory looks like, because there will not be victory?
I just think that the people of Missouri, the taxpayers of Missouri and the 4th Congressional District, the 772,047 people I represent anyway, deserve an answer. We cannot be in another long extracted conflict like we were in Afghanistan, like we were in Vietnam, with an unlimited budget to prosecute this war and try to push Putin back to pre-1991 borders. Zelensky will not tell us what victory looks like. Does it mean taking back Crimea, the Donbas region, going back to the pre-1991 borders? He will not tell us. I cannot get the answers in an open setting or closed setting. And our taxpayers deserve to know the answer. How long are we going to be in this for? How much is it going to cost us? You know, the other argument, Jason, is that if we cannot secure our own border, our border with Mexico, when our own people are being killed, 107,000 a year from fentanyl poisoning, why are we spending money to secure the Ukrainian border? My people in the district ask that. I think it's a very good question.
My last question for you, and you've heard this from other supporters of Ukraine aid, if Ukraine ends up being like completely annexed, or the puppet government is put in, and then Russia turns to the Baltics or Poland, which are NATO allies, couldn't you make an argument that helping Ukraine push Russia out of its country as much as possible and maintain a friendly government to the West is a preventative measure from World War III? Because if any of the other those things happens, like Russia invading the Baltics or Poland, Article 5 comes into play and we're suddenly at war with Russia.
Yes, I see that. And I know that Putin has not just telegraphed that intent, but has said it publicly, that he will not stop with Ukraine. This guy's crazy. He is a power-hungry, maniacal dictator who has disguised himself as a president. That is very well understood. But I also understand that we cannot continue with few to any answers as to what victory looks like. I think this is what this is going to come down to, Jason, is what Zelensky does not want to admit right now, is that they're going to have to start talking. There's going to have to be some talks about how do we end this war. And I don't think it's going to happen while Biden is still in office. I think when President Trump gets back in the Oval Office, I think this thing will be over within a week.
Well, he has to win that election first, so that may be a bit presumptuous, but you never know. That's why people vote in November. Congressman Mark Alford is the representative of Missouri's 4th Congressional District. Congressman, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jason. Always a pleasure.
This episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.